The Great Gatsby, Disc 2.
There was dancing now on the canvas in the garden, old men pushing young girls backward in eternal, graceless circles, superior couples holding each other tortuously, fashionably, and keeping in the corners, and a great number of single girls dancing individualistically or relieving the orchestra for a moment of the burden of the banjo or the traps. By midnight, the hilarity had increased. A celebrated tenor had sung in Italian, and a notorious contralto had sung in jazz, and between the numbers people were doing stunts all over the garden, while happy, vacuous bursts of laughter rose toward the summer sky. A pair of stage twins, who turned out to be the girls in yellow, did a baby act in costume, and champagne was served in glasses bigger than finger bowls. The moon had risen higher, and floating in the sound was a triangle of silver scales, trembling a little to the stiff, tinny drip of the banjos on the lawn. I was still with Jordan Baker. We were sitting at a table with a man of about my age and a rowdy little girl who gave way upon the slightest provocation to uncontrollable laughter. I was enjoying myself now. I had taken two finger bowls of champagne, and the scene had changed before my eyes into something significant, elemental, and profound. At a lull in the entertainment, the man looked at me and smiled. "Your face is familiar," he said politely. "Weren't you in the 3rd Division during the war?" "Why, yes, I was in the 9th Machine Gun Battalion." "I was in the 7th Infantry until June 1918. I knew I'd seen you somewhere before." We talked for a moment about some wet, grey little villages in France. Evidently he lived in this vicinity, for he told me that he had just bought a hydroplane and was going to try it out in the morning. "Want to go with me, old sport? Just near the shore, along the Sound?"
"What time?"
"Any time that suits you best." It was on the tip of my tongue to ask his name when Jordan looked around and smiled. "Having a gay time now?" she inquired. "Much better." I turned again to my new acquaintance. "This is an unusual party for me. I haven't even seen the host. I live over there." I waved my hand at the invisible hedge in the distance. "And this man Gatsby sent over his chauffeur with an invitation." For a moment he looked at me as if he failed to understand. "I'm Gatsby," he said suddenly.
"What?"
I exclaimed. "Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought you knew, old sport. I'm afraid I'm not a very good host." He smiled understandingly. Much more than understandingly. It was one of those rare smiles with a quality of eternal reassurance in it that you may come across 4 or 5 times in life. It faced, or seemed to face, the whole external world for an instant, and then concentrated on you with an irresistible prejudice in your favor. It understood you just as far as you wanted to be understood, believed in you as you would like to believe in yourself, and assured you that it had precisely the impression of you that at your best you hoped to convey. Precisely at that point, it vanished. And I was looking at an elegant young roughneck, a year or two over 30, whose elaborate formality of speech just missed being absurd. Some time before he introduced himself, I'd got a strong impression that he was picking his words with care. Almost at the moment when Mr. Gatsby identified himself, a butler hurried toward him with the information that Chicago was calling him on the wire. He excused himself with a small bow that included each of us in turn. "If you want anything, just ask for it, old sport," he urged me. "Excuse me, I will rejoin you later." When he was gone, I turned immediately to Jordan, constrained to assure her of my surprise. I had expected that Mr. Gatsby would be a florid and corpulent person in his middle years. "Who is he?" I demanded. "Do you know?"